seated, please. Court is ready to hear argument in 070787 Spectrum Healthcare versus McDaniel.
May it please the court, Mr. Harris will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Your Honor. Medical malpractice case, the issue is about the 120-day expert report. And just by way of a little background, this is an important point about this case is that it was initially filed in federal court, and no 120-day report was served there. And then it was dismissed from federal court on jurisdictional grounds because the United States had been a party, and Judge Rodriguez down in San Antonio dismissed the suit. It was the medical malpractice suit was again filed in state court in San Antonio, and again the 120-day deadline ran, and no Chapter 74 report had been served on us.
You say again the time ran. Did it run in the federal court before it was dismissed? Is that what you're saying?
That's a good question, and I don't have a clear answer for you on that. But what I can say is under the law at the time, the federal court, Chapter 74 or Section 74351 said that you needed to serve that report within 120 days of your claim, and that's the way it read at the time. So I think looking back on it now, I think you can make a very good argument that it ran in federal court. It began to run when the federal suit was filed. It ran in federal court, and that could be the end of it.
Given some time to think about it, would you submit supplemental briefing on the point?
My understanding is Judge Rodriguez considered it a procedural rule and sort of made an eerie guess that it wouldn't be required in federal court.
That's correct, Your Honor. Judge Rodriguez did not say in what he wrote in his opinion that the 120 days never ran in federal court. He simply said he was not going to enforce it there. He did, in his opinion, admonish the plaintiffs that in a situation like this, it would be a good idea to serve such a report within 120 days. So we got back to state court. It was filed in state court down in Bexar County. The 120 days ran again. No expert report was served. And then we filed a motion to dismiss. And we felt like we were on good grounds there because we hadn't gotten a report in both cases.
Was the scheduling order before or after the time expired to file the expert report?
The scheduling order, Your Honor, was entered into 2 or 3 months before the 120-day deadline ran in state court.
If the trial court had said expressly that notwithstanding 74351 or whatever it is on the 120-day requirement, that the deadline for filing an expert report for this health care liability claim is going to be, the date I set, which is later than the expiration date under the statute. If that were the case, would you still be here today, or would you say no, that the deadline was extended by the trial court?
Well, I think that would not operate to extend the deadline. I think it would be an abuse of discretion.
Would it be void, or would it not, or would it be erroneous?
I would say it would be an erroneous order for the court to make because the only exception to that 120-day deadline is an agreement by the parties.
And then should the plaintiff in a case like that be the one whose case is dismissed because the trial court issues an erroneous order, or should the defendant be the one to have to complain about that order, mandamus, or do something to protect their rights?
Well, I think the defendant, off the top of my head, I think the best way to handle that would be to somehow get a motion to dismiss for failure to file a 120-day report to get that denied by the judge, so you then would have a basis for interlocutory appeal.
So what weight, if any, do we give a docket control order?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
What weight, if any, do we give the docket control order? If as the chief says, the judge makes an error, you said it's error, maybe it's a void voidable order, what weight do we give that if a party is relying on an order? It's an order signed by the judge. That's a judge's order.
Well, I can't give you a good answer to that, but I can say in this case we did have an agreed order that was entered into, and it did not address the 120-day deadline. The whole thrust of my argument today is really about the docket control order that was agreed to by the parties and entered into. And if you look at it, it nowhere does it say anything about the 120-day report. It doesn't say give a time period of 120 days.
It does refer to Chapter 74, though, right?
It does in one instance, Your Honor. Down below all the deadlines, there's a clause or a provision in there that says, basically the parties are going to go ahead and conduct discovery notwithstanding the limitations in Chapter 74. Basically, what Chapter 74 would do is limit our discovery and their discovery until the report's on file. And by making that a part of our agreement, we're telling each other that we're going to go ahead and you can go ahead and conduct your discovery and I can conduct mine. That's the only reference to Chapter 74, and I think that's significant because what it shows is that we're well aware of Chapter 74. We know how to say it if we want to refer to something in Chapter 74, and back up in the top of the order where there is there are the deadlines for testifying expert reports. It doesn't say anything about Chapter 74. And that's the whole point. I think it's a terrible misconstruction to say that those deadlines that pertain to testifying expert reports.
Would you agree it could be a little confusing to a lawyer in the case reading that order that it looks like, I mean, it's a pretty broad order. It looks like to the extent these deadlines with respect to experts may be in conflict with a statute, the deadlines established here take precedence.
Well, I think the order taken as a whole, Your Honor, would not be confusing to experienced litigators who have, routinely entered into docket control orders and know about the disclosure of testifying experts. And that language in the docket control order actually pretty much tracks the rules pertaining to discovery and experts. For example, if you go to Rule 194, you'll see 194.2, it says, you got to disclose testifying experts and their names and information about what they're going to say. And then within that, it says you need to provide reports and some other information for retained testifying experts. And this is the real danger in allowing this language to say what the Fourth Court majority has allowed it to say is that we've got hundreds and I don't know maybe thousands of docket control orders out there in med mal cases that could very easily be construed the same way, and it's so easy for the parties to make it clear.
Is this a form order?
It is in the form of a form order.
Is this the same kind of order that would be entered in a sworn account and a slip and fall and a traffic case?
It's very much like that, Your Honor. And I think
how much like it is? It is what I'm trying to get.
Well, Justice Simmons wrote a dissent, and what she said there, it's just like the orders that are given to the public in Bexar County.
And is that true? I mean, is it?
That is true. You will find deadlines for testifying expert designations and reports from them, and then.
But I mean, how does it happen? I mean, some courts, they've got this printed out in a form, and you come into the hearing, and the judge says, "What date do y'all want for this? What date do y'all want on it?" And you just write in the dates. Did the judge print this up? Did you all print this up?
Your Honor,
did this order get prepared?
This form was presented to us. After we got a special trial setting in Bexar County, it was presented to Mr. Beekland by the plaintiff's counsel. They're the ones who drafted it, and they gave it to us to sign. And I know from talking to him, he looked at it, and this is just this is your standard form. I mean, that's what it is.
In all cases.
In all cases. Now, you wouldn't make the Chapter 74 reference, obviously, in all cases, but that's something that we did want to do is go ahead and get started with discovery.
The standard docket control orders, I understand, have these dates and these terms in it, and that was going to be my question, is the non-numbered paragraphs, it's further ordered. I presume that the second one referring to Chapter 34 is not in your standard docket control order that a court issues. But what about the first one, ordered to the extent these deadlines may be in conflict with deadlines set by rule or statute, these take precedence. Is that standard form if the order comes from the court?
Your Honor, in Bexar County, we're not typically given forms to fill out. I think I've been in Harris County before, and I've gotten forms like that, which you're saying. But I do believe that is a pretty standard provision that you would see in a docket control order, basically just belt and suspenders, just in case any of the deadlines we have above are going to conflict with what you'll see in the rules or elsewhere, we're going to make these control. And I think that's just a typical provision that you would see in lots of docket control orders.
Whose initials are on the front?
Your Honor, I can answer that. That's my legal assistant. This is a copy of my order from the legal assistant.
And I think it's I would like to direct the court to I think it's Murphy versus Russell, a good decision that this court has made a good discussion of the difference between testifying experts and reports they might have and expert testimony, and how that is very distinct from this Chapter 74 threshold report. And the reason I'm making that point is because the docket control order talks about testifying experts.
We're talking a lot about, obviously you have great experience and Mr. Anderson does, but let's say you're a relatively new lawyer and you've just taken on one of these cases and you get this order. You're aware this is a Chapter 74 case, but you get this order and it says, well, notwithstanding any rule in Chapter 74 or statute or any rule in the civil procedure, your deadline for designating expert witnesses and providing a written report doesn't expire until January 11th, which is sometime after the deadline under Chapter 74. And then if we enforce Chapter 74, notwithstanding this order, which seems to expand it. It seems to work an unfairness on the both that new lawyer, but more importantly, his or her client, I guess.
Well, and you're talking about the inexperienced lawyer who's just out of law school.
Well, not necessarily, but any lawyer who doesn't have the level of experience that you bring in these sorts of cases, who is looking at an order that says, "I'm the judge. I'm ignoring the statute. You instead comply by the deadlines I set here." And, you're a lawyer in that court, and you say, yes, Your Honor, we'll certainly do that.
Well, Your Honor, I that's a good point. I would say, if this lawyer does not know the first thing about Chapter 74 and doing medical malpractice cases, then there might be some confusion there.
It's confused by the judge, then. Maybe the judge doesn't know the proper rule there. What are you to do?
Well, Your Honor, I think... I mean, most of the judges I've been in front of know about the 120-day requirement, and I can say too that.
Well, that makes the answer easy. It's just maybe one or two doesn't, and you get that scenario.
I'm
sorry,
goes
back to the question: how much discretion, if any, do you give the trial judge? A judge, you're an idiot. This isn't what the law says, or
not at all, Your Honor. I think what would be important to point out is that, the intermediate courts of appeals that have looked at this issue, and there are many of them. Have all decided that the DCO does not extend the deadline, and the DCOs, the language in the DCOs in those cases is like this language or similar to it, and uh, and And that's what I would point out to the judge if the judge didn't know that, is that, you know, if the argument was being made, and in fact, the San Antonio Court of Appeals, what was surprising about this is that, you know, we did have a 4-3 split with the en banc court on this issue, but, you know, we had an opinion at Olveda versus Sepulveda out of the San Antonio Court of Appeals just a couple of years earlier where the court said with this, and the language in that case is just like the language we have in the DCO here, the court said where you're talking about retained experts, you're talking about testifying experts. And you know, what's a little troubling to me is the, I'm sorry, I'm out of time. Any more questions?
Are there any further questions? Thank you, Kathy. We'll hear from you on rebuttal. The court is ready to hear argument now from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Anderson will present argument for the respondent.
First, it's an honor to be here, my first time, and I would like to take the opportunity to introduce my co-author, who is here today, Ms. Jessica Lambert. I'm glad that she's able to be here, since she is due to deliver in a few days, actually. So
not today, though.
Not today, Your Honor.
Thank you.
This case is the issue in this case is very clear. It has to do with the agreed docket control order. That was the issue before the trial court, the issue before the fourth court, and the issue here today. Does it constitute an agreement under the procedural rules of Texas to extend the deadline for the filing of the 74351 expert report? As this court has said, when you're reviewing...
Just to be clear, regards an earlier question.
Yes, sir.
Do you agree that there has to be an agreement?
Yes, I do.
So the trial court couldn't just order it on his own?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It has to be an agreement to extend the deadlines, and I think we have one here, and I'll address that here in a minute as to why I believe this order is very clear in that regard.
And I suppose in doing so, we would look at this order like we would any other agreed order, interpret it like a contract.
As any other agreed order, as this court has said in National Union Fire Insurance Company versus CBI, and I'll quote, whether a contract is ambiguous is a question of law that must be decided by reviewing the contract as a whole in light of the circumstances when the contract was entered. And I think that's important here because that puts this whole issue about was there agreement or was there not an agreement before the court. Let me go ahead and, if the court will indulge me just briefly, let me just run over a brief timeline of what happened. This suit was initially filed in federal court in April 15, 2004, and it was filed against the United States of America and Spectrum and Sims. We had to file it in federal court because the Federal Tort Claims Act said that's the venue we had to choose. After the issue was joined, a scheduling order was entered by all of the parties recommending deadlines by which certain documents were to be produced, including expert reports. Spectrum and Sims didn't request an expert report be submitted within 120 days, even though they were aware that Section 74.351 fell under subchapter H of the statute that says it is a procedural provision, and they should have known that we're in federal court, usually federal procedure controls. The federal court then entered the scheduling order just as the parties had agreed to. And the parties then undertook discovery in federal court without any restrictions. Spectrum and Sims then sat silently during this time about the 74.351 report until after 120 days had run in federal court, at which time they filed their first motion to dismiss for failing to file the 74.351 report.
Well, I may be confused here.
Yes, sir.
Which wouldn't be surprising, but why is the burden on them? Why can't they just sit back and make sure that you do what you need to do in filing the expert report? When you don't do it, file the motion like they did so here.
Yes, sir. Because as the Honorable Xavier Rodriguez had said when he denied their motion on November 16, 2004, when you're in federal court with federal procedure and there is a conflicting state procedural rule, then the federal rule takes precedence. So in applying the Erie decision, the defendant knew or at least should have known that there would be a question about whether or not the 74.351 timeline would be initiated as an operation of law rather than having to request such a report under Rule 26. And basically what Judge Rodriguez said is that 74351 is, as the statute alleges, it is procedural. And because it's procedural, Mr. Defendant, if you want an expert report, all you have to do is ask for it.
And this is all a fascinating question, but we're not going to decide that now.
I understand.
The question here is just, is this an agreement?
And I'm in laying the precedence.
I don't mind hearing the history of the world if it relates to whether this is an agreement. But whether or not this is applicable in federal court doesn't help me at all on that, does it?
Well, the issue I believe that Justice Medina was asking me about was whether or not I think the federal court case would even initiate the requirement for a report, or whether you could get a report in federal court within 120 days is contemplated by 74351. And the court said you certainly could, but you have to ask for it under Rule 26. And Spectrum and Sims didn't do that.
Yeah, I've got a question about this. It's you say it's an agreement, but it's drafted as an order, correct? It's a docket control order. It's signed by the judge. The parties don't say we agree. It's not a Rule 11 agreement. Parties don't say we agree to waive the deadlines. The party says the judge orders that the deadlines are ineffective, right?
It was an agreed order signed off by, it was an order created after a discussion with Mr. Beeklin, the lead counsel for Spectrum and Sims at the time, because of the quandary that we were placed in. And that's why I was going over the timeline with the court. Because in this case is one of which there may be other cases that are equally confusing. Because once this case then was dismissed, when the court refused to exercise supplemental jurisdiction after dismissing the United States out of the federal case, it was returned to, or it was sent to state court 400 days after it had originally been filed in federal court. So we knew, or at least Spectrum and Sims had alleged, that the 120-day timeline had already passed while this case was in federal court. So when the parties were getting together to put together their recommendations regarding a docket control order in this case, this is the information that they had available to them. This is the circumstances by which this order was created. Number one, suit had already been filed in federal court. It was a health care claim. It was a health care cause of action involving the same parties and the same cause of action. Spectrum and Sims knew that a claim had been filed and asserted that the 120 days had run while the case was in federal court. After the lawsuit was filed in state court, on June 2nd, the Houston Court of Appeals entered the case of Mocalla versus Meade, and that case said basically where a plaintiff refiles the same case against the same parties with the same cause of action, you don't get another 120 days. Mr. Plaintiff, if you did that, you could just avoid the statute by just keep non-suiting the case over and over again until the statute ran, but you certainly would defeat the purpose of the 120-day report. So they knew that. They also knew that it would more likely not be impossible for Ms. McDaniel to timely file a report in state court since the timeline had probably already run in federal court. So the parties had already participated in discussions. And there was no case holding that a suit filed in federal court was not one that would initiate a health care claim that could initiate
just,
the 120-day timeline.
The language. Whoever the report, the 74351 report, doesn't have to be verified, right? Have to be sworn
yes,
to.
Honor.
It's just a letter from a doctor. The doctor doesn't have to appear at trial, doesn't have to promise to attend appear at trial. And filing, sending a report to the other side, serving a report, is no indication that you intend to use that expert at trial, is it?
That's my option, Your Honor.
And so if we were here in another case where somebody sent an expert report, they had expert deadline like this, they didn't designate anybody, but they came in and said, oh, well, when we sent them a report, that was our designation. That wouldn't be enough, would it?
Probably not, but that's not the facts in this case.
So, but if sending the report is not enough to designate them at trial, how can agreement as to when who's going to be designated for trial is enough to be the report?
Because in the docket control order, that was a document that was discussed and created by my office, but discussed and presented to the court. There are two classes of experts that are addressed. One are testifying experts. The other are retained experts. Retained experts have to produce a report. The retained experts may testify at trial. They may not testify at trial. A retained expert may be a 74351 expert, or it may be a consulting expert.
A 74351 expert doesn't have to be retained, do they?
Yes, they do, Judge. I haven't been able to convince any physician to prepare a report critical of another physician without having to retain him and pay for his services.
Well, but I know some will do it privately.
I'll be glad to take the names.
Say the doctor did something wrong, but I'm not going to testify to it. I'm not going to testify him against it at trial.
That's not been my experience.
Somebody mentioned in the case just previous, this is just a good housekeeping seal of approval that there's some merit to the claim. I'm not saying they're going to win, and I'm not saying I'm going to testify against them. So why your argument that retained experts, there's nothing in 74351 that says that expert has to be retained.
That's correct.
That's just your understanding of the way it usually works.
That's the way it usually works. It's not just an understanding, Judge.
Looking at the rules of procedure, 194.2F(4), if the expert is retained by or employed or otherwise subject to the control of a party, then they have to produce certain things, which suggests the definition of retained experts under the rules of civil procedure. The expert that you hire to provide an expert report under Chapter 74, you don't have to produce these things for that expert, do you?
Not unless he subsequently is identified as a testifying expert at trial, in which case we have to produce all of those things.
And you didn't do that in this case.
We haven't gotten that far yet.
So it's, I guess what I'm hearing is the implied definition of retained expert under the rules, at least 194.2, seems to be different from what you're saying you intended retained experts to mean under this docket control order that you drafted.
No, not necessarily. And that's why the language in the paragraph that says that the deadline set out here take precedent was written so generally, so that if there was a conflict between the rules or other deadlines set in statutes, that the parties could look at a specific day in which the expert report was going to be produced and could rely upon that day. At this particular point, and even today, and even in lieu of Leland versus Brandel, of this court's decision back in June, there still hasn't been a definitive determination about whether or not a suit that's filed in federal court actually initiates the 120-day timeline.
Well, let me be a little clearer. I think my earlier statement might have been accurate. I may have been confusing to you. Under the rules, a retained expert has to provide certain things. You have to provide certain things for retained experts. Discovery. 194.2. Some experts that you generically retain, you may not have to provide this discovery for, correct, under 194.2?
Yes, sir.
So in your docket control order, did you mean for retained expert to refer to the narrower 194.2 definition or broader definition of retained, generically retained?
I meant it to include retained experts, including those retained who may only be asked to prepare a expert report utilized pursuant to provision 74351.
Well, what about the defendant? What if the defendant had retained experts just to consult and they had reports? Does this require them to give you that?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor.
Or if you retain experts and you don't want to provide a report, you just want to find out what it's about, does this require you to give that?
No, what it does is if the defendant or the plaintiff uses a retained expert, then they subsequently intend to rely upon that expert's testimony or evidence. Then they have to comply and produce the documents that are required by the rules.
So there are retained experts. There could be retained experts that are not covered by this.
That's why it's possible.
Okay, so you cover testifying experts and retained experts provided that the retained experts, it looks like we may have something that's not so unambiguous after all.
The disclosure requirements. I'm sorry.
In other words, you said that under your drafted docket control order, retained experts only have to produce the written report and CV if they subsequently are used in a way that triggers that under the rules.
Is that accurate? Yes, Your Honor. If they're relied upon.
But that's not in this docket control order. You don't say that.
I did the best we could and thought we had the language that was necessary to affect the object of the parties, and that was to clarify when that 74.35 order was going to be produced. And it was all because of the filings in federal court, the filings in state court, and the fact that I believe, just a pure reading of the statute today, that the 120-day timeline expired while the case was in federal court. The only way, then, that that report can be produced would be by this docket control order, which constitutes an agreement to extend that deadline to a date specific. Even if my client had filed her expert report when she filed her petition, it could still be argued that without an agreement, it was already too late. So under the circumstances, I think, looking at the document in light of the circumstances to the parties, there were a lot of gray areas. We were in the fog about a lot of what the impact of something was. And this document was intended to create a specific timeline by which the defendant was going to be given an expert report.
And that makes quite a bit of sense. If the deadline had been 120 days from the filing of this case, but why would the defendant agree to extend it another, 4 months?
The quid pro quo would be the continued participation in discovery that had already been initiated in a federal court, but continued then for 6 months in state court, which is the second paragraph in the docket control order that basically said that the defendant can participate in discovery without limitations, even those imposed by Section 74. That was the quid pro quo to the defendant to go ahead and do that. But the other part
I'm having trouble with is by the time discovery is completed or been extensively conducted in the federal court and then again in the state proceeding, by January of 2006, does anybody care what the expert report says?
Well, I furnished the expert report on January 11th to the defendants in accordance with the docket control order. And then 3 weeks later, the defendants filed their motion to dismiss based upon not filing it within 120 days. They never challenged the report on its adequacy or the qualifications of the expert to give the report, just that it hadn't been filed in 120 days.
Well, and usually the purpose of the report is to kind of indicate early on that this case has some substance to it. By January of 2006, surely you knew about as much about the case as could be known about it.
Well, I don't know if we knew all about it, but we knew enough about it, both in federal court and in state court, to know that, number one, the case wasn't a frivolous case, which was the direction that the legislature, the purpose for the statute, is set out by the legislature, and it wasn't one that was completely meritless. In other words, it was a prima facie case that was supported by expert testimony. So the issue in the case is, what did we know when we entered the docket control order, and what didn't we know? And what we didn't know was, what was the 120 days? Given the McCalla decision that said that just because I refiled the case in state court, it was a change from federal to state court, and a little bit different than McCalla, which was just a repetitive non-suit by the plaintiff. In this case, we were involuntarily dismissed out of the federal court and had to file back in state court again, and we filed the same cause of action against the same parties that we had in state court. And that was the dilemma that we were faced with when we entered this order. If this order does not constitute an agreement of the parties to extend the deadline, when did the deadline run? Did the deadline run in federal court? Did it run 120 days after the case was refiled in state court? I mean, we didn't know that then. We don't know that now.
But it wouldn't matter for this case because either one of those would have run before it was sent.
In this case, it wouldn't matter because the 120 days ran in federal court, not in state court.
But even if it didn't run in federal court and you had a new one in state court, it ran too.
It ran in state court. That would be correct.
Suppose in another case we have the same docket control order, but none of these extraneous facts about first filed in federal court, confusion about when the deadlines run. We just have this simple order in a simple case. Would it extend the deadline too?
You mean if the circumstances were different, would the order mean something different? I don't think so. The order, the paragraph, is very clear. It says the deadline for identifying, testifying experts and retained experts in producing a report is a specific day, and that takes precedence over any of the rules and statutes. That is very clear. If you just looked at the four corners of the document in a vacuum, that's what it says. And I don't believe there's any...
Can you say the order is unambiguous?
It is absolutely unambiguous, Your Honor.
If it was ambiguous, the trial court found against you, right?
They did. I don't know what the basis for the trial court's decision was. I requested, but they didn't enter findings of fact and conclusions.
Well, I mean, should that count for something? It is drafted as a court order, and the court says that's not what this provision means.
No, it shouldn't, Your Honor, because the question of this contract is a matter of law for the fourth court and this court to determine.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Mr. Beeklin will present the rebuttal for the petitioner.
May it please the court.
Does it make any difference whether it's an order or just an agreement, the Rule 11 agreement?
I think not. I think that if it is agreed between the parties, I think that if there is an agreement and is signed off on by the court as an order, I would say not.
There is a little difference. I mean, a Rule 11 agreement, you just file it with the court, and it doesn't matter whether the court agrees with it or not.
That's true, Your Honor.
But y'all's was kind of a conditional agreement. I assume the trial judge didn't have to accept your trial setting.
Now, the way it works in Bexar County...
Are judges in Bexar County such pushovers that they let lawyers tell them when they're going to try cases?
The way it works in Bexar County, Your Honor, we went into the monitoring court, which assigns trial settings. You can't get a trial setting, especially a special setting, without the approval of the monitoring judge. The monitoring judge makes the assignment of the trial date. Then typically what happens, and what happened in this case, is the parties say, Your Honor, we can agree on dates. We can agree on deadlines. And they leave the courtroom, go outside, and if you can reach an agreement, then you fill in the blanks. And if you can't, you go back in.
But it would have to be conditioned on the court's approval.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
So it's a little different from a written agreement that's enforceable, Rule 11, immediately. This one is conditional.
In that respect, it would be, Your Honor.
And yes, the condition was satisfied. The judge approved it.
That's correct.
Is this a form order?
It is, in essence, a form order. It is very typical of almost all of the docket control orders that I am familiar with and have signed over the years. The differences in that order, every lawyer has his or her own preferred form. The similarities are in the numbered paragraphs. The differences are in the orders at the end. My typical docket control order does not have the paragraph that talks about conflicts with other statutes or rules. The typical one that I've signed doesn't talk about doing discovery, each party doing discovery, notwithstanding Chapter 74.
But you don't see any conflicts in this order based on your position with Chapter 74. Because you don't think retained experts includes the expert that provides an expert report.
I believe, and my understanding of the way this was drafted, because I have run into problems in the past with a concern about experts who are not retained experts. In particular, in medical malpractice cases, we have a lot of times occasions to use the testimony of treating doctors. We have no control over those experts. We expect them to be identified by each party because if the party intends to call them or may call them as an expert, they should be identified so we know about them.
Had the treating physicians been deposed or discovery taken from them before this January 2006 deadline?
Not in this case, Your Honor.
Any other experts that were deposed before this
deadline? No, Your Honor. The distinction that, for better or for worse, the distinction that was intended, by me at least, in referencing designation of experts and reports and CVs from retained experts was really because the retained experts are the ones that are controlled by the parties. They're the ones from whom you can get a report. You can't get a report from a treating doctor. You can't get a report from someone that you don't have any control over. So that clearly was my intention. And as long as Mr. Anderson is talking about the circumstances giving rise to this docket control order, I think one circumstance that's very important that hasn't been discussed is what was in the motion to dismiss that we filed in federal court. In that motion, and the majority made reference to this in its opinion, in that motion we spent nearly three pages and an entire section taking the position that the scheduling order in that case in federal court did not constitute an agreement between the parties, even though it was an agreed scheduling order, did not constitute an agreement by the parties to extend the deadline on the Chapter 74 report. They knew that. We knew that. That was our position.
And there's similar language in there about this order takes precedent over conflicting rules or statutes.
In the federal court?
Yes.
I doubt it very seriously, Your Honor. That was an order that was more than likely, it's been a long time, but a form order supplied by the federal court that we sat down, filled in the blanks to, and agreed to.
So I'm going to presume then that you all, in discussing the agreed docket control order that's before us today, did not discuss whether it specifically extended the Chapter 74 expert report deadline.
Absolutely did not.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted. That concludes the arguments for this morning, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oh yays, oh yays, oh yays. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, now stands adjourned.